am Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality they see underneath it all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this is episode number 39.
Oh.
Can you imagine?
Coming up on the big 4-0. I feel very mature.
Wow. Yeah, you bet. I'm still waiting for the moment where I get mature. Is it? I'm assuming it just happens. So
yes.
I'm still waiting for that day.
Yes, you suddenly look up and go, oh, my young days, they were all back there.
But this podcast is still younger than me.
That's right. Definitely younger than me. So we're not going to go into any of that now. Hating ourselves
all right.
too much.
Well, today we're going to talk about a older film. Was it 1952, I believe?
Okay.
The Quiet Man, directed by John Ford.
Starring John Wayne and Maureen O'Hara.
Right, right. Who apparently have done more movies than just this one together.
Oh, well, and see, this is how bad I am at being a John Wayne fan. Because I am, but I just have hardly watched any of his movies. But.
Well, I just did, you know, because I know nothing, very little about John Ford, very little about John Wayne. We talked about that before. I haven't seen too many John Wayne movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did look around a little bit, you know, before the podcast and after I saw the movie, just to kind of see what I could see. One of the first things that jumped out at me, I wanted to just get this in. I don't know if this is on all the movies, but at the very beginning of mine, it said Marion C. Cooper's and John Ford's The Quiet Man.
Oh, my.
And yeah, and Marion C. Cooper is the guy who did King Kong.
Oh my gosh, one of my favorite movies. Oh.
Yeah. So I saw that in the credits there, and I was like, Marion C. Cooper, where have I heard that? Oh, yeah, I remember.
Right.
Because when the new King Kong movie came out, one of the audiobooks we were sent over there at SFF Audio was the full cast audio version of Marion C. Cooper's King Kong.
Oh.
That's where I saw the name.
Man.
Because I'm not a, you know. But anyway, King Kong was 1933.
Oh, yeah.
And
so good.
Marion C. Cooper is, was he the director?
I was just wondering if he directed it or if he wrote it. But I didn't realize, I saw that name also, but I didn't look it up. And if I'd have known that, I would have been even more interested. Because I, as you can tell, King Kong probably would go in one of my top 10 list of movies.
Oh, very nice.
I love it that much. And I don't know why.
The Faye Ray version?
Oh, the original, the 1933 version.
Of course. All right, cool.
The Peter Jackson version is not bad, but there's a little too much of, you know, she's dating King Kong and Adrian Brody got kicked out kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
The original didn't do that so much.
Good. So. It's been so long since I've seen the original that I really need to pick that up again.
Me too.
Yeah.
Well, I also did a little looking around because when I chose The Quiet Man, I was just thinking of the fact that, of course, I love this movie and that it's very against type for John Wayne. He's not a swaggering cowboy. He's being very low-key. He doesn't want to draw attention to himself. Not that the cowboy does, but, you know, there's something about a cowboy that just, in a movie, it draws attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize John Ford directed this, and I saw this and went, wow, both of them against type.
Yeah, and John Ford, he directed a bunch of Westerns, and a lot of them starring John Wayne. And we talked a little bit about Liberty Valance one time.
Yes.
I still have not seen it, but I noticed that he directed that one as well.
Well, I disapprove of Jimmy Stewart in it.
Right,
about it.
Right.
But
he seems to have directed a lot of manly man movies.
Well, and it was interesting because right before this, I suddenly said, you know, I guess I should just look around a little at the information. And John Wayne, I knew that when he died, he was a deathbed convert to Catholicism.
John Wayne was. Wow, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
People would ask him what religion he was, and he'd always just kind of smile and say, I'm a, what was it? There was some phrase like a Catholic of the heart or something, meaning right before I die, I'll convert, but I don't want to have to worry about it till then. And he lived a life, you know, he had several wives and all this, but they were always Catholic.
Hmm.
They were always Hispanic, evidently, and his kids all went to Catholic schools.
Oh, no kidding.
And John Ford and he were really good friends, and there's a long article that Roger Ebert posted within the last month, which was an interview he did with John Wayne, and I'll put a link to it, and I meant to send it to you, but I forgot, But he was saying that, well, John Wayne was telling him that he was at John Ford's deathbed. That's what good friends they were.
Oh, wow.
And John Ford was a lifelong Catholic. And when I was reading about him, they said, well, his name, he changed his name for Hollywood, and his original last name was Feeney, F-E-E-N, I think it's E-Y. And I suddenly went, wait a minute, there's a Father Feeney who wrote books and things, and that was a brother or a cousin.
Interesting.
So he was really Catholic. He was from the old country, and that's why he loved Ireland and he wanted to make this movie. And then he was one of those people that evidently, I guess, the big themes in his Westerns, and I haven't watched enough, but what somebody said, and it may have been a Catholic article, so I don't know, but they were saying that somebody called his movies Irish Catholic miracle movies. They said it doesn't matter if they're in the West. That's the heart he's got in them.
Oh, no kidding.
Which made me want to watch more of his movies.
Yeah, that's interesting. And the things that I was reading said that he dreamt of making a movie in Ireland. So, I mean, this movie was extremely important to him. And the movie was made, like I said, in 1952, which... He had been making movies since the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is not one of his first movies. You know, he made something like 140 movies, I think I remember seeing. So he was like, oh, this is like a dream project of his.
Mm-hmm. I think it took 14
to go to Ireland.
Years.
Oh, did it really?
To get it made, yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, and before we move on, I also noticed when I was looking up John Ford's credits, I clicked on a movie called The Fugitive from 1947, thinking that it may have been, you know, the first version of The Fugitive with Harrison Ford, but it's not. But listen to the description of The Fugitive from 1947. Anti-Catholic and anti-cleric policies in the Mexican state of Tabasco lead the revolutionary government to persecute the state's last remaining priest.
Wow.
Starring Henry Fonda.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, interesting.
Writing that one down on my TV list.
Yeah, so, you know, when you said that he was Catholic, that made me...
Yeah,
seems
well...
Seems to all fit right together, doesn't it?
I know. Well, and it's also, as I said, I was interested in watching some more of his movies. I mean, I've seen a few of the Westerns that he made with John Wayne on, you know, Saturday afternoon TV, back when that was a thing, before there was cable or anything like that. So some of them I couldn't even tell you the names of unless I just was watching and said, oh, this is one of those movies.
Yeah.
So, but this is, this movie is almost like a little romantic fairy tale, except the people seemed kind of real to me.
Oh, that's a really good way to put it. A fairy tale, I really didn't consider it that, but that description fits very well.
Yeah, I didn't, it's just this idealized look at Ireland. You can tell he loves the countryside. It's so lushly photographed, and the people... Or the characters are kind of broadly drawn, but it's done with affection.
Yeah.
And
I want you all to cheer like Protestants.
I loved that. Yeah, and the fact that, you know, there's the IRA and everything, but that's before they'd gotten super violent.
Mm-hmm.
So at one point, this one guy says, oh, I see the IRA's in on this, too. And he says, oh, if it was, your house would be burning down to coals. and the guy next to him goes, and a good thing it would be, too. And they just kind of laugh and move on. So it was kind
of like, oh, my, that's... yeah.
But, the basic story, if anybody hasn't seen it, I guess, is John Wayne shows as Sean Thornton. Shows up, nobody knows who he is, and he's being driven to the place he wants to see, by Barry Fitzgerald, who's this wonderful actor. This little guy looks like a leprechaun.
He was fantastic.
Yes, and he was in Going My Way with Bing Crosby. I don't know if you've seen that, but that's...
Which one by Bing Crosby?
Going My Way.
Going My Way, no, that doesn't...
The old priest, and Bing Crosby's the young priest who gets sent in and has his new ideas. And the second movie of that, it was a little series, and that was The Bells of St. Mary's, and then Bing Crosby was the same priest, I guess, the father, whatever, and then there was a nun who ran the school, and that was Ingrid Bergman.
Yes, I've seen that one.
Yeah.
Yep, The Bells of St. Mary's.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But the first one had
Barry... The first one I have not seen.
The priest,
so,
I think. Yeah. So, as the old priest, so
cool.
I love him. But anyway, so yeah, it turns out that Sean Thornton came from... that country. He doesn't remember it, but his mother told him all about it. They had to emigrate to America. He grew up in a terribly poor-sounding part of Pittsburgh, I guess.
Yeah, Pittsburgh.
Yeah. And
I remembered that because that's where I was born.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Very good. I just remembered him talking about the slag heaps and things like that. And I thought that was Pittsburgh-ish.
Yeah, they said, what do you do in Pittsburgh? And he said, steel. Yeah.
Yeah, we eat steel.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know any more about him. And anytime anybody acts like they might know who he is, he kind of turns it away. So there's a tiny bit of a mystery. And as they're driving to the house, he sees this gorgeous woman who's a shepherding sheep with this dog. And she's got this gorgeous red hair, and she's striding across the meadow, and he's like, whoa, who is that? And then from then on, he is pursuing Mary-Kate Danaher, who the little man tells him, and her hair is a good indication of her temper, basically. She's got a fiery temper.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the rest of it is really about their courtship and marriage.
And it was interesting. I guess we should have a spoiler point because nobody knows anything about Sean's past or anything like that, and that all plays into it.
Yeah, but some people do evidently listen to this without watching the movie, which, welcome and good.
Yes, for sure.
But don't get it ruined. I liked the mystery.
Yeah, me too. So should we make this the point?
Okay.
All right, so if you want to go watch it, go watch it.
Yeah.
And then listen to the rest.
That's right.
Okay, they're back.
Okay. Thank goodness. Now, what did you want to say?
I found the whole thing interesting. He was an American, and later in the movie, I'm going to go ahead and reveal this because it to me the whole movie is in this light. Mm-hmm. He is a famous boxer.
Yeah.
Who only one person in town figured out who he was because he recognized him. And interestingly enough, he was the Irish state religion priest. What do you call that?
I was thinking, Anglican, except
Anglican,
that's not
right.
What you would say, I guess, Irish. But it's the equivalent to us.
Equivalent,
the Episcopalian.
Right. Episcopalian, sort of, right. Yeah. I think that's what it was. So, so he recognizes him and promises to keep his secret. But what has happened and why John Wayne's character, Sean, left America in the first place is because he accidentally killed somebody in the boxing ring.
Mm-hmm.
And it colored his character for this entire movie. Because he is a manly man, he talks about steel and how, it hardens a man and makes him really tough and everything. He talks about that. But then he backs away from fights. Which he has the opportunity to do pretty quickly.
The Irish just don't understand this at all. They're just like, oh, you're a coward, you are.
That's right. So, and then Mary-Kate flummoxes him too. Because she's also
fiery.
Ready for a fight.
Mm-hmm. She's quite confrontational.
Yeah.
Which you understand when you see her brother, because the first time you see her talking, she's serving dinner to the farmhands, I suppose it is, and then her brother comes in, and he's pretty much a lout, I think you would say, or brutish or something like that. And, he doesn't think about her or anything but whatever he wants, and so she instantly will flare back with stuff and slam down bowls of potatoes and in a way that kind of shocked me. I mean, when she would say things, she would just blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm startled.
That's right. Yeah, and I was taken aback. We'll probably get into this a little bit later, but I mentioned to you that there were two points that I recall being very uncomfortable watching this movie. I was just like, yikes, because I wanted to really like Sean, but... And I did. If I ignore these parts, everything else I really liked about him. But there was one point. We're in spoilers, so they do eventually marry, and their marriage night. He, I know she's being difficult.
Difficult.
But he,
yes.
He steps up to her threateningly and then forcibly turns her around, kisses her, and then throws her on the bed and then leaves.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, wow, you know. While that was happening, I was like, you know, geez, you know, because he's like 6'4".
Oh, yeah. You
know, because very scary, like,
you
know.
You didn't know he was just going to leave.
Yeah, I was really uncomfortable watching that. You know, you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, well, and you're right, except from that point of view, I guess when I was looking at it, what the point that was being made in a way was, yeah, he could have done that, and he didn't. Mm-hmm. He restrained himself, so that was very
He did. He good. Scared. He scared her. But he didn't hurt her.
But well, but the other thing was, is while he was doing that, and I know this is the cliche, and if you're a feminist, you don't like it, but, you know, she melted in his arms, basically.
Yeah.
Didn't she?
She
so
did. Yeah.
It was the thing of, even though I'm so mad at you, and she's being completely unreasonable from an American point of view, and it was made for American audiences, we're not supposed to understand it. We're supposed to understand Sean more than mm-hmm. that. So you're just like, she wants her things, she wants this and that. You just got married, just let it go, which is what he keeps saying. And the brother won't let her have any of her stuff, which is her dowry.
Right.
And that's what she's making a big fuss over. And he can't understand it. It's just some stuff. He's got money. He'll get her more. And she says, you don't understand the point. So you instantly see this clash of cultural values and of tradition versus, you know, the American, we'll just get more, not a big deal. And when that comes up.
Well, I think there was more to it from his point of view, though. It's one of the things that I like most about him.
Yeah, I just meant in their conversation.
Oh, okay.
At that point is, you know, the thing that's leading up to this whole thing. And so when he was doing that, he was basically, I thought, making the point that those, here's what's important between us. Right now.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was melting in his arms and responding and going, basically, you're right. Mm-hmm. This is more important. I don't care. This is what counts. And so he made his point, and she's like, oh, baby. And he's like, guess what? I'm not going to force myself on you. I'm mm-hmm. super mad, and I'm leaving.
Right.
So from that point of view, it was like a romance novel. There's a lot of romance novels written that way, and you wouldn't have read those. But
yeah, I guess I didn't understand the appeal of that. You know.
Yeah, and I'm not saying it was the right thing to do, because you're right. It was a threatening moment where you're like, holy moly. But, yeah. And plus, it was 1953 when I think, or two, when you expect, when movies were made more elementally, maybe, that way. I don't know.
Yeah.
So I kind of just went, old movie, okay.
Gotcha. No. And I kind of did the same thing.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about the second moment. I'm sure you know which moment that is. We'll talk about that later.
I'm trying to think now.
Yeah, you'll know.
Oh.
But let's bring it up. Let's bring it up to date before we move on. So she's got her brother, who is a completely unreasonable guy. And he's upset because John Wayne outbid him on this property he wanted. And John Wayne bought the property because he was born in this cottage. And mm-hmm. his family had owned that at one time. So he wanted to buy it again. So he bought it. And then, of course, it wasn't good that Mary-Kate was, you know, his sister. Yeah. So, anyway, and then, you know, John Wayne's chasing around Mary-Kate, and he's just completely unreasonable because he's just upset.
Right.
So, yeah, just getting mad. That was pretty great how they got him to agree to the marriage, too.
Yeah, because
this was like the whole town.
Yeah, because the movie's being narrated by the town's priest.
Yeah.
He's not in there a lot, but every so often he'll just go, so it was that me and so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so, we hatched up a little plan. Yeah.
That's something else. Yeah, and the priest is always fishing, which I thought was funny.
Always wanting to get that salmon that's been eluding him for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Which, yeah, because to me one of the funniest things was when she's coming back from, they've had a big fight again about this dowry, and she's coming back, and she's, oh, well, there's the priest, and he's like, and he's in the middle of the river, and he's trying to get the salmon, and he's talking about how he's been trying to get it, and she's like, oh, I've got to talk to you, I'll do it in the Gaelic. And so she's basically confessing that on their wedding night, she locked the guy, or basically the guy didn't get to have his marital privileges, and he had to sleep in a sleeping bag out by the fire in the living room. And at one point, he actually stops and forgets what he's doing and throws, or maybe he doesn't throw the fishing rod down then, but he's like, what? You know, and so you don't have to hear what she's saying, but you could tell from his reactions A bag, Father, with little buttons. Like, on his wedding night. You know, and so you could see, and she's like, oh, I know, it was awful, it was awful. And I just loved the way they emphasized his reaction from the fact that he would stop fishing in order to pay attention to that. It was that important.
Yeah, it was funny.
Yeah.
It was funny. Yeah, and the other guy that was funny, you know, the person that you mentioned who was in that other movie,
Barry Fitzgerald.
Michaeline Flynn.
That's it.
That's his name in the movie, because I just have the list here.
Yeah.
But man, is he funny! Almost every single moment he was in made me laugh.
Yeah, because he narrates, but he's making a constant running commentary.
Yeah,
muttering things in the corner.
Yeah, and one thing was hilarious that made me laugh out loud because, you know, I was reading the Odyssey by Homer.
Oh, yeah.
But when John Wayne throws his wife on the bed breaks, and then John Wayne storms out. That's the moment we talked about before. Well, the next morning, this guy shows up. And with furniture and things from her house, and he puts a cradle in the room and sees the broken bed, and he says, "Impetuous, Homeric."
Yes.
Loved it.
I know.
I thought that was great.
That's his favorite adjective, I think, because he uses it later, maybe during the fight.
Oh, really? I must have missed that.
He says it again at some point, and it's about a similar sort of a feat of strength or something that impresses him. He's, oh.
Yeah, I admit that there were times when I couldn't quite make out what they were saying because they all had accents. And I couldn't figure out how on the DVD that I had to give myself do you remember when
captions?
We did in Bruges, I had to use the closed captioning to understand anything they said.
Yeah.
So I've since then gotten in the habit of every now and then I turn that on, but I could not find it.
Oh, well.
Yeah, it wouldn't work on the DVD that I had anymore.
And I'd seen it just enough times, not recently at all, but that I kind of knew what was going on. So sometimes my husband would say, "What?" And I'd go, "Oh, he said this," you know.
Uh-huh.
I was able to put it together because of that. But the thing is that even though the brother is a lout, and you really can't love him, although the one thing I love about him is if he doesn't like somebody, he tells his little clerk who follows him around everywhere, "Do you have your book?"
Mm-hmm.
And he pulls out a little book and he says, "Good. Write his name down in it." Okay. Write the name down. "Is it in there?" "Yes." "Strike a line through it." Oh, that'll show him.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually say that. I was like, "Oh, really? I'm getting out my book and writing your name in it. And I'm striking a line through it."
Oh.
But the brother, even though he's awful, what you find out later is he really likes the rich widow in the town.
Right, which is how the town basically comes together in a conspiracy to help this marriage happen.
Right.
Because they would all love for it to happen, but the brother is the only one who won't approve. So to get him to approve, they convince him that this widow wants to marry him. But only if there's not two women in the house. You can't have two women, and one of them redheaded. You can't have that.
Yeah. Who would want to live with her in the house? Oh, good point, he says. I can't blame him.
Oh, shoot. So he says, "Yeah, well, you know what? Maybe she should get married." So he agrees.
Yeah.
And then on the wedding day, he finds out that this isn't quite the truth. And that's why he withholds half the dowry however much he withheld.
Yeah. Well, I think he was withholding it all, the 350 pounds or whatever it was.
And all her money that she had saved up all by herself.
Yeah, that's right. Her extra money. You won't think I don't have my fortune. That's what they all called it. Not a dowry, a fortune. I have my fortune.
Right. And that's what, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
This is part of what I like so much about Sean Thornton's character is, you know, he accidentally kills somebody in the ring. He was doing it all for money and everything like that, and it completely shifted his priorities.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came over to Ireland, and she's talking about dowries and all this, he said, "But it's just unimportant."
Yeah.
He had been changed by his experience in the boxing ring to where none of these customs or things like that were important to him. And I thought that was interesting. But for her, it was a principal issue And it wasn't that the money was important to her. It was the principle, and this is just how it's done. And eventually they had to come together.
Well, and also it's explained at one point, I think Micheline Flynn says, he might be the one who says, you don't understand. What this means is that she can be independent. It means she's not just dependent on you. She's her own person, which is what she kept trying to tell him, and she didn't know how to express it. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, it's not likely she would have ever left him, but she could have.
Yeah.
Or what if
yeah.
she wanted to do something else, start a little, I don't know, truck garden or something. I mean, it's, you know, it gives her her dignity.
Yeah.
It means she's independent but equal.
Right.
And so I liked that point is that...
So they were almost at odds with each other, but both, neither of them being wrong.
Right.
You know,
and that was the cultural differences where they just don't get it.
Right.
And it's kind of the thing, too, I thought of... it's one of those things that happens in marriage so often. You're both trying to explain things from a completely different point of view, but you don't have the equipment always to explain exactly what it is that you're trying to get at, whether it's because of a male and female difference, a cultural difference, you know, just a different experience level of something. Mm-hmm. And you've got to get past it, hopefully not as tempestuously as this couple. but you know, you do have to keep trying. You can't give up. And I thought in miniature and in fairy tale kind of format, I really liked it because it really kind of showed that how different two people can be, still love each other, still have all these differences, but still strive to come together because of their love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like that.
Well put.
Thank you. Well, we're getting ready to do that Beyond Cain and Marriage Retreat thing again. I'm in that mode. So.
Fantastic. Show them all this movie.
Yeah. I thought of that. I thought I'd need to recommend
this. Tell them not to drag your wife 5 miles through the fields.
No, although you admit that was one of the best of the movie.
That was also hard for me to watch. It was hard for me to watch. She'd fall down and he just kept walking and dragging her.
But you know what the funny thing was?
What's that?
He didn't want to do that kind of thing.
I know he didn't.
He was doing everything. He had to do it to make her respect him and to make the brother respect him. And he was like, ugh. And that was the thing, though, of the, you know, everybody misjudged him simply because he wouldn't physically fight.
Right.
You're a coward. I can't respect you. She was going to leave him because of it. And actually, of course, the irony is that he was a more powerful, stronger, better person than any of them knew.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, because this is the Catholic part, that's the part about what's strong about turning the other cheek, as Christ said. People will look at it and they'll say, oh, God didn't tell me to be a doormat. Well, no, but it's the strength of somebody who could do more who's refraining. And saying, you know what, you're so weak and little, and I understand that you've got problems. I'm just not going to worry about it. Hit me again, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the attitude that, of course, I have a terrible time with, being alpha personality, American, list all the things. But
well, I'm not particularly good at that either.
I think we all struggle with that.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's,
yeah, there was one character who, she said, what manner of man is it that I have married?
Yeah.
And then, so, I can't remember who it was, but he said, a better one than you think, or something like
that. Yeah, I think a better one than you know.
Oh,
something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And that was the thing, is I thought of that, and I just thought, if we could have more of that mindset of, I know I'm more secure in myself.
Uh-huh.
And he was doing it, of course, from a fear also that he didn't want to kill somebody again.
Yes.
Because he knew what he'd let loose. He said, you know, if I'd have just gone in there to win the fight, that would have been one thing. But I went in there to, you know, drive him into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with completely the wrong attitude. So when he changes that attitude, that gives us also the viewpoint, if you're looking at it from that point of view of, we shouldn't be so proud and trying to get our own. It should be, this doesn't matter that much to me. You as a person matter more, or this other principle matters more. I should be able to step away and lose, essentially, over it. It's hard to do. I mean, yeah, you can see that from watching him.
Yeah, and yeah, I'm liking him even more and more as we talk.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, that's the thing. You know, he came, you know, and they did come together. You know, he figured it out. And so did she, and so did she.
Oh, yeah. Because what she saw.
He dragged her for 5 miles.
Oh, my
right?
gosh.
I mean, made her walk 5 miles. Because earlier in the movie, she said it was only 5 miles to go shopping or something
like
that.
Just a stretch of the leg.
Just a stretch of the leg. So he forces her to come back. And then she was there for just moments. And then she says, I'm leaving, and I'll have dinner on the table when you get home.
Yeah,
and,
but
she was respecting him at that point, too, I think.
Well, but it was also because he said, you know what? You owe us this money. And she's like, oh, yeah. And the brother says, well, you can't have it. And he goes, fine, take her back. Those are your terms, not mine.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, oh, what? And the brother says, what? And so he gives him the money, and I can't remember. There was some point that he actually, he's okay, fine. And so then he goes to throw, John Wayne, Sean Thornton, goes to throw it in the fire, and she gets there first and opens the door for him with a proud look. And he throws it in, and she shuts the door and looks at him, and he looks at her, and she says, well, I'll be home and have dinner on the table for you. And she's got this great smile on her face, like, okay, I get it. I see how it's going now. You know, it was a great moment.
And he smiled at her as she walked off.
Yeah. Didn't they have great chemistry?
They really did. Yeah, they really did.
I mean, there's some moment, and I think it's when they're courting. I know I'm taking us off topic for a second, but it's when they're courting, they wind up in that graveyard, the cemetery, and he's standing there looking down at her, and she goes, oh, well, first we have to have this phase of the courting, and then this, and then this. And he's like, no. I can't wait 3 weeks. I'm going to kiss you right now. And there's just this look on his face. It's so tender and sweet. And I was like, oh, I think I'm in love. You know, it's that male ideal, you know, for a woman of, you know, I don't know. It was just sweet.
I'm writing all this down.
But yeah, use this on your wife. I'm telling you, it should all work quite well. Well, and then the rain catches them, you know, and they're under that arch. And I was like, wow, I've never seen such a physically vital looking couple together. They're just kind of glowing with life, and you know, and she'd kiss him and then look into the distance while she's leaning on his chest, and they're all wet from the rain, and it was just like, oh my, I've got to fan myself. And this is, you know, 1953 movie, they're not doing a thing wrong, but it's just very good.
Yeah, I agree.
They're a good couple.
Yeah, I kind of saw the same thing.
Yeah.
I was just looking up here, what other movies have them in it. Well, it's not going to be as easy to look up as I thought, but there was a famous movie, and now that I've said that, I have no chance. But anyway, they have been in more movies than this together, and I should go find it.
Well,
what other things has Maureen O'Hara done that have been really excellent?
Well, gosh, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
But I did see some things. There's somebody who's, you know, got this little website that's like a fan site for this particular movie.
Uh-huh.
And I just kind of glanced through it. But what Maureen O'Hara had said evidently was that she and John Wayne did so many movies together or knew each other so well. They were like brother and sister in a lot of ways.
Wow.
They were really, really good friends.
Mm-hmm. See, Rio Grande was the one.
Oh, and I think I've seen that.
Yeah, that was the one that I recognized.
Yeah.
The final installment of John Ford's Calvary trilogy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Trilogy.
Trilogy. Yeah, wait a minute. What are the first two? Yeah, now we have movies to look up.
What, Tie a Yellow Ribbon? Or, I don't know many of the names of...
Yeah.
That was Rio Grande?
Rio Grande, yeah.
Yeah, because the one John Wayne movie I really do know is Rio Bravo.
Ah.
Which is just a fantastic movie. It's Angie Dickinson and Ricky Nelson, Dean Martin, Walter Brennan. I mean, come on. It's just classic. They sing. The harmonica gets played. There's bad guys. It's four of them driving the bad guys out. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
And evidently, and this is the one I think I've said that sometime we'll have to do a double feature because – he did not like High Noon. John Wayne didn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so this was his and Howard Hawks, the director's, answer to High Noon.
Interesting.
Rio Bravo was. And so I was oh, sometime we should watch both of those. And
watch them both.
Over time, yeah.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no Maureen O'Hara, just...
Sounds good.
So
at the end of this movie is a big brawl.
Did you like that fist fight?
It's got to
be one of the most famous ever.
I thought it was great. Yeah.
It's so funny.
It is funny. And then they stop right in the middle of it to have a drink.
And then they start fighting.
Yeah, because they keep fighting, and eventually they end up in front of the pub. That's what they call them over there. And stop to have a drink.
And then
they tried to pay for each other's drink, but neither of them would
and
let
then
it.
It starts again.
Yeah.
I'm
almost too old now to get thrown over the bar like that or through the window. Better get something done.
Not quite, though, right?
Not quite. I have a little bit of time left to get that done.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Well, the thing that's so great about the fight and the dragging back of, you know, walking her back 5 miles from the train to her brother's is that the entire countryside is an eager audience to this whole thing.
They are. Yeah.
As it happens, people start getting phone calls at the pub and various places. And they're like, oh, can you make them wait for a while? Because the whole town of such and so is going to come over and see the fight. They've gotten on a bus. They're on their way. Because it's epic. Everybody's been waiting for this stuff to happen. They've all been gossiping about it. So, which I guess you can relate to being from a small town.
Yes. Yeah, for sure.
But so that's what keeps it kind of light and from getting all gloomy and dark and everything. You can't take the fight that seriously because nobody's really getting hurt, you know?
Yeah, nobody's getting hurt. And you can tell that their relationship is changing. I mean, John Wayne and his brother-in-law.
Right.
Their relationship is changing as time goes on.
Yeah, because the brother-in-law is respecting him. Because
right.
he's fighting and he's holding out and everything. And John Wayne, of course, he can just keep going and fighting and fighting. But the brother's big enough and I guess has fought enough that he can keep up with them.
Right, right.
Yeah. So they come home arm in arm, drunk as lords, for that dinner she had. She's looking at him and she's got this disapproving look and then she, oh, well, then that's the way of men. And look at her face and you're just like, oh, the Irish.
Oh, man.
So,
That is something.
But the thing about the brother that I was going to say also is that, you know, he is mad, and so he's not going to let the sister have the money just because he's mad. And at one point, the sister's like, oh, he's in a good mood. He sold these horses or something. Go ask him for the money. And he's like, I don't care about the money. And she says, no, but he does, and that's the point.
and that, gosh, you know.
Right?
Yeah, again, you know, talking about this stuff just adds so much to it that I didn't quite notice on the watching, because you're absolutely right. You know, so it was really going both ways, her understanding him and him understanding her, and the depth of that connection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really built something there, you know, so this is actually a richer romance than most I've seen in movies.
It really encompasses so many key points that I've heard different couples bring up is, you know, in the years that we've helped with this retreat. And, you know, this is nothing confidential or anything. This is just from monthly meetings of people who are going to help on the retreat. And they'll share little things. And all these things. I'm looking at it going, oh, my gosh, I've heard like 3 couples talk about this. And, you know, we've got a lot of multicultural couples where one might be from Mexico and another one from Finland. Mm-hmm. And that kind of thing where they'll talk about the difficulty they had just understanding each other or how different their families were. One from a huge family where she'd never remembered being alone. The other guy, it was just him and his brother and his father and his mother. So they were a little unit. So, you know, how do you overcome those gaps?
Yeah.
That's what you need help with.
Yeah, and you need to understand that what is important to you doesn't have to be important to your spouse. Not always, right?
Right.
But it needs to be respected. Vice versa.
Yeah, respected. That's the good word. That's the respect they need. And that's what she left him. She couldn't respect him. because he wouldn't stand up for her rights, even though he didn't understand why she cared. So what happened at the end is, I guess, he finally stood up for her rights.
Yes.
And she was like, okay, then. I don't need that anymore. You care about me.
Wow.
I know. I just went, could you guys
all right.
He
can now drag her 5 miles across the field.
Okay, thank you.
I can watch it again now without being uncomfortable.
I just love it.
He was rough, though. Man, he was rough. That trip was rough because she'd fall down and he just kept walking.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, because let's face it, he was so mad by then. And I think back in 1952 or one or whenever, you know, it's the kind of thing where he wasn't hitting her and all this kind of thing. And she was never actually hurt. And the whole town is watching. So it's almost like they're all like, oh, this is nothing. And so these days we'd look at that and go, oh my gosh, but it's the same as the fist fight. It's not really real. It's just making the point. Mm-hmm. And they did it in such humorous ways where he's walking through the gate and she's having to go up and down the stile really fast, you know, to keep up with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you think about how she never, ever really tried to see his point of view or care what he thought, you can understand why he's so furious by that time.
Yeah.
I mean, when the guy's gypped out of his wedding night and then has all that scorn poured on him, you know, I'm just saying.
Right. Yeah.
But the thing too about the brother that got me is, when are your actions necessary to make a point, and when are they just for revenge or pride? Because all she wanted was to get back at her brother.
Yeah.
She was willing to jeopardize everything when he kept saying it doesn't matter. And she's like, no, but he cares. So despite the fact that she knew he didn't care, they'd been getting along for a change. They'd gotten over their fight and the rocky night before and all this stuff. She's like, oh. All she can think about is that one point. She wants to win. She wants her way.
Yeah. And I was feeling that she was wanting to uphold the tradition.
I think
that's why, and the tradition was extremely important to her. But you're right. I guess, you know, if I think about it the way you're saying, I think a little bit less of her.
Well, because I can't really say that I think less of her because she'd only ever lived in that little village.
Yeah, that's
true.
That's
all she knew. He'd been to America and he'd been back and, you know, he'd had a completely different, broader experience.
Yep.
And she'd lived a very narrow life.
She sure had.
So she hadn't had a lot of chances to think outside that box. But the fact that all she cared about was getting back at her brother when she said, no, but he does. And that's what matters. And that's the point.
Yeah.
And it was like, you don't care what your husband says at all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I was like, oh, Mary Kate, I could just drag you 5 miles myself. I'm glad he's going to do it. Because really, that's the only thing she understood.
Yeah.
She had to see it demonstrated in a way that she understood. And I guess that's why it didn't bother me as much, because she had already shown. She was so stubborn that she was never going to get it until he showed it to her.
Mm-hmm. And that he did.
Now, and then people can disagree with me and you can disagree.
No, I don't disagree. I'm thinking about it from kind of a different perspective now. But yeah, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
But it is neat. I mean, a lot of romances, you know, I'm just like, you know, I'm a guy, whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this does have a depth to it that surprises me.
Yeah, this is, it's Scott Nearing at, what, Good News Film Reviews?
Uh-huh.
His one-line summary was, if there was such a thing as a chick flick for guys, this would be it. He rarely gives unabashed approval to any movie. In fact, he and I usually think completely opposite, but he really liked this movie.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Yeah. I'll put a link to his review, but he was just saying, you know, a man's man and a woman's woman, and, you know, the marriage is great. All the things we've been saying and more, so.
Oh, that's cool.
But I thought that was great at chick flick for guys.
How funny.
Yeah.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much for letting me watch this one.
Oh.
Now, have you seen any other of John Ford's movies? Another connection that I noticed is that John Ford directed The Grapes of Wrath. which is not a book that we've done, but
I
believe
that
Steinbeck.
That
yeah, I think Steinbeck. I guess I was going to say I thought that he kind of wrote it concurrently with the movie, meaning the script and the novel kind of came about at the same time.
Kind of the
but
way.
But I am absolutely. Yeah, kind of like that. But as I say that out loud, I could certainly be wrong. But
yeah, I don't know.
I'll have to look that up, and I can't.
And that was Henry Fonda.
Yeah, and it was Henry Fonda.
Yeah, well, John Ford is just one of those legendary film directors.
Yeah.
Like John Huston.
Right. I remember Orson Welles said something. His favorite director was John Ford, and I recall seeing something where he said he watched a movie called Stagecoach.
Oh, yeah.
And he said he learned more from that movie than anything else. That was before he directed Citizen Kane.
Well, and it's funny, because you see, you haven't seen Stagecoach?
I have not seen Stagecoach.
Okay, I saw it so long ago, and the funny thing is, I mean, again, a Saturday afternoon or Sunday night movie kind of thing, mm-hmm. black and white, the stagecoach going along, and you just see the six or eight people or whatever. That's it, the whole thing. But
really?
This whole drama is carried out on their ride on the stagecoach and everything that happens to them and all their interactions with each other. And the thing that's – and John Wayne is so young. But – I still remember, I can still see it in my mind's eye, scenes from it. That's how vivid it is.
Wow. So do they tell each other stories about their past?
Well, see, now I can't remember. No, I think it's like one of those things is, as they're being jolted along, one person's going, leave me alone, can't you, blah, 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 blah. And then, you know, like something happens. They get robbed or the wheel comes off or I don't know. Now I can't remember. But it's one of those things where they're not doing a lot. But you're learning about everybody from their reactions to everything that happens and the people around them.
Yeah.
And everybody mentions that movie. It's a seminal movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's funny because John Ford is not one of those people who I think of as, ooh, a director I love and I should watch his movies, like Billy Wilder or Ernest Lubitsch, who did To Be or Not to Be, who I now am starting to watch some of his other movies. But I'm starting to think I need to look at his movies more and put them on a list and just start seeing what he's done and picking movies out to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea at all. I watched a Stanley Kubrick not long ago.
Oh, yeah?
I rewatched The Shining. And I got to tell you, you know, I'm ambivalent about his ambivalent is not the right word.
I hate that movie.
I know. The thing is, there are parts in that movie that I honestly just my jaw drops open. The kid riding around on his trike is a three-wheeler.
Brilliant.
I mean, you're just watching that, and then the outside in the maze in the snow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's jaw-droppingly stunning.
You're right.
But Kubrick is so. I don't quite have words. He's a pessimist. It's like the movie AI, which I know he didn't direct, but it was called Kubrick's AI. You know, it's just so depressing.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the things that happened in The Shining was, you know, the little boy. I know. Gosh, we're getting way off. I guess we're done, right?
Whatever.
But the boy.
You guys
has this thing called The Shining, you know, and he mentally calls the cook.
Right.
The cook is in Miami, Florida.
Yeah.
And the cook flies all the way to Denver and all this stuff. And spoiler alert.
I know, I'm just suddenly going, oh my gosh, you're right. That's one of the most disturbing things. The book is not this way, but
and the
Stanley
book
Kubrick.
Was not that way, yeah. So I don't know that I should finish. I guess if you guys want to find out what happens, but Stephen King, his book did not, that character did not have the same path, let us say, isn't that an interesting thing to say about Stephen King?
Yeah, I know that it was more optimistic.
And it was more optimistic. I don't find Stephen King to be pessimist. But I think Kubrick's movies are both beautiful and maddening at the same time. And that's how I felt about The Shining.
Yeah, I could believe it. Yeah. when you said that, I suddenly went, oh yeah, that brilliant, those brilliant shots, and then
that kid riding around in the hallway on
that, is brilliant.
It's just, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, and he pulls up short when he sees ghosts in front of him.
Twins or whatever.
Yeah, it's remarkable.
That's another one of those books, though, that I have memorized.
I can hear the sounds of the wheels on the carpet and down on the hard floor, and then the carpet hard floor.
It's really
just stunning, I thought.
Yeah, and it's funny because, well, I mean, I guess we'll be talking about Stephen King next time, but...
Oh my gosh, that's right, a segue.
Because I was like, oh, we'll have to do The Shining sometime, and I went, wait, we're going to do The Stand because I just read the first couple hundred pages of it or so last night or the other night.
Great.
And it was one of those things where I think that... You're right. He doesn't get enough credit for being optimistic.
Yeah.
We'll have to talk about that later, I guess.
We definitely will. Because I there's no way I could read so much of him if I felt that way. I think he has a pretty good view of humanity.
Well, I read his older stuff, but I haven't read a lot of his newer stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The Tommy Doctor did me in.
I've read darn near everything he's written. But we'll talk about him next time.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway,
well, it might have to spread over two podcasts for that, right?
It might have to.
It's such a long... But you're right, you know.
We were talking about great directors.
So John Ford, and then, like I said, Billy Wilder and Ernest Lubitsch are the two in this household that we look for. Do you have favorite directors like that?
I mean, a lot of the directors that, you know, from movies that we've done here. Christopher Nolan is one that I've... completely love now.
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen the new Batman yet, but
no.
And then what's the guy? Mark Thompson, who directed Stranger Than Fiction. He is somebody that I followed through and watched several of his.
Did you?
Yeah, like and I'll be damned if I can remember all of the titles, but one of them was Monsters. Was it Halle Berry and Billy Bob Thornton?
He's interesting because he's like Danny Boyle, who's a director I love because he does such wildly different movies all the time.
Yeah, and they really were, but they are fascinating. I've enjoyed going through some of his.
Yeah.
Things like that. And then Frank Capra was one.
Oh.
You know, I've been in a play of a movie he directed, You Can't Take It With You. And then, of course, I love that his Christmas movie, It's a Wonderful Life, that I watch. Gets me every time. Love that movie.
It does.
Yeah.
You know, did I tell you that, and talk about dating me, one time I was watching Johnny Carson and Jimmy Stewart was on it, and Johnny Carson was saying, what's your favorite movie you've ever done, because you've done so many movies, and he goes, it's a movie nobody's ever heard of, and it's too bad because I always thought it was a really great movie, but for some reason nobody cared for it, and it was It's a Wonderful Life, and I was like, and Johnny Carson's like, I haven't heard of that, and he goes, I know, Frank Capra, and he goes, Frank Capra, I haven't heard of it, and he goes, yeah, nobody cared about it, then about 3 or 4 years after that, it's on, you know, every channel at Christmas, just because that was, everybody discovered it, and they didn't have to pay royalties on it, so.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we did at the theater one time. We did a benefit at Christmas time. I found a radio script of It's a Wonderful Life that was an hour long. I guess, you know, they used to do this all the time. They'd have, you know, Jimmy Stewart and, you know, the cast would show up and do a radio show for an hour.
Oh.
And they'd call it like Academy Award Theater or something like that.
Oh, yeah, right.
Anyway, it probably wasn't... anyway, it was fun. We had a great time. We just got up there and did the radio show for an hour as a benefit. It was a good time.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yep. Wish I had recorded it.
Oh, yeah, me too.
You bet.
Oh, well,
yeah.
Perhaps another time.
Perhaps.
Perhaps you'll get back into theater wherever you are now.
Yes. Logan,
now you're
Utah.
Moved?
Logan, Utah is where I live. I was going to move to Idle Falls. Long story short, got another job offer and took it.
Right.
So I'm in Logan, Utah.
Excellent.
Officially. So.
Excellent.
Yes, which is good.
Yes.
That was the longest move ever recorded. I mean, that's the way it feels to me. It feels like we're still moving. So.
But you guys finally are all in the same place now?
Almost.
Oh, okay. All right.
Sunday.
Okay.
Everybody shows up Sunday. So.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
What a great day that will be.
So we got the advance view.
Yeah, that's right. That's
with
right.
this. Okay, yeah. then. So,
yeah.
Well, so I guess we have nothing left to say. It's not
well,
like
what is coming up. Yeah.
Yeah. So the stand, not, yeah, The Stand.
That's right. The Stand is next. It's this little tiny book
that
some fellow named Stephen King wrote. We hope it's good.
Yeah. It's I know it's golly, it's a cast of thousands.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but it's got everything. It has the apocalypse.
It does.
It has big government that's bad. It has
singing.
Heroic and bad people. Oh yeah, singing, rock and roll.
Rock and roll, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Dogs, a loyal dog.
That's right, good and evil.
Good and evil in the most classic senses of all. So
yes, for yeah. sure, for sure.
And I'm really, really honored to see a few people that I know on Goodreads who've actually read the book or are reading it ahead so they could listen.
Oh, how exciting.
I know. Cool. I was excited. I was like, oh my gosh, we got people to read the book.
Oh, that's fun. That yeah. is fun. Yes, and then the next after that, the movie is going to be Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yes.
Which I'm really excited about. Coen Brothers.
That.
Yeah, there's some directors I follow too. And I can't wait to talk about this because of the ties to the Odyssey by Homer, which Jesse and I are finishing up this weekend.
Okay, I was wondering if you were done because I was thinking, I've got to read those last four chapters.
Right.
I don't know if he's put out the one right before that or
no,
not.
I actually have it on my computer. And
oh, okay.
Yep, he hasn't asked for it yet, but when he does, it'll be ready.
Luckily, I'm just keeping up with that. So I'm like, I've read those four. I'm ready for you to talk about those. Then I'll go on from there.
Yeah, he's they're a couple weeks ahead over there.
Yeah, well, that's good.
It's fantastic.
And then after that, if everybody's schedule holds out, we're going to do a coast-to-coast recording.
Yes.
Of our first topic episode.
Good story, coast-to-coast.
Yes, that's right. We'll have our L.A. representative, our Utah representative, our Texas representative, and our New York representative. So basically, it's going to be heroines, past and present, I guess.
Yeah, I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Scott and I saw Beauty.
Yeah.
And it's not about Beauty, but
saw Brave.
I was talking
Brave.
About... Or Brave, I'm sorry.
Yes,
I don't
Brave.
Know what I was thinking. Beauty and the Beast, I guess. Brave.
Beauty and the Beast, right.
Well, I was thinking of one word.
Beauty and the Beast. That's another heroine. I like Belle.
Yeah.
Belle is my kind of girl.
Isn't she wonderful?
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my top 10 movies also. Yeah. King Kong, Beauty and the Beast. So I'm into monsters.
So who's joining us on that one?
So that will be Heather Ordover, who we've had on before
Yay.
With the Rathathon. And Rose Davis.
Hooray!
Yes, who
That'll be
I
neat.
Will be excited to talk to. But it's because we keep coming back again and again to this idea of heroines, past and present, because of our discussion on Jane Eyre.
Yeah, and we still get a lot of comments about that. So we thought we'd do a topic episode, which is a little bit different for us, but I'm excited about it.
Yeah, I know.
I think
me
it'll
too.
Be something really neat. And if it's a success, we'll throw one in now and then.
Yeah, so... That's planned to be the next one. We hope it works out. We've had to put it off once already due to various scheduling, and we'll just see what happens.
Keep sending me to other cities.
I know, they have to stop that. Don't they know we have a podcast to get out, man?
I know. I just don't understand it. I'll have to give them my schedule.
Yes, please. Tell them your job is nothing compared to the needs of our audience and ourselves to discuss this. And then I haven't looked past this because I knew we had three coming up, and so I thought I'm going to try to be a little more spontaneous for the book and possibly lighter.
Sounds good.
We'll see what hits me then.
All right.
So,
awesome. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again, and thanks everybody for listening.
Yeah.
It was a good time.
It was. See you in a couple weeks, everyone.
All right. We'll see you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Sorry, I'm a touch late. I was a couple minutes early, and it started improving my Skype experience. It keeps doing that, and I'm just going to have to start, 5 or 10 minutes early so it can update.